Remember, at the end of this half hour, you can call the station, and it's your turn to participate for the talk show part of the program. The article, several articles that were of interest to me about the dating service came out, one in the Miami Herald and the other in the Chicago Tribune. And again, another large article that I'll go to that one next. The one from the Chicago Tribune and Miami Herald, November 1st, is titled Court Nominees Dating Service Was a Success. The senators want to know more about it. And if the senators want to know about it, I say then Ginsburg was through. Now, the gist of the article is that Judge Douglas Ginsburg left college for 3 years. He was at Cornell 1 year. And in 1960s, he started Operation Match, which I say is a CIA title, Operation Match. And it was one of the first computer dating services set up for college students. I had located in the 1960s a CIA Project Resistance, which was undercover activities on college campuses, but he wouldn't use the same name that the CIA used. There was Operation Chaos, and there was Project Resistance, and there was a COINTELPRO program, and Operation Match sounds just like that. And one of the stated goals was of Operation Chaos and COINTELPRO program run by the FBI and CIA was to break up marriages, relationships of politically active students, and it was the FBI reports account for Young Americans for Freedom, Tom Charles Houston, working with Army, Navy, intelligence, all branches of government, and Ginsburg took 3 years off. Ginsburg formed this company first in Cambridge, Massachusetts, with two men. In 1965, they expanded to Los Angeles, New York, Chicago. I mentioned those places and how he then left and went back to Cornell and then to Harvard University. Look magazine in 1966 had an article about Ginsburg's company. Well, I doubt if there's many 19-year-olds going on 20 that get an article in Look magazine, and then New York Times had an article, and that would give it the publicity or push to get those suckers in that might want to participate. And according to Look magazine in 1966, and Ginsburg was just 20, so this had to be older people as a control over him that then in turn could provide his college education to go back and then get into law school. It said there were more than 90,000 applications in the first 9 months. Now, Ginsburg, relatively unknown to people looking into his past as a justice of the Supreme Court, could certainly look into the Look magazine articles or knew that this obscure person, this dropout, was written up as having grossed $270,000 in 9 months. And how did he make it? Operation Match asked students in four major cities to answer no less, this is 135 questions about themselves and the traits they sought in companions. These questions were for premarital satisfaction, fixing them up with dates, and were not for marriage purposes. Now, you know how Strom Thurmond and Jesse Helms and Orrin Hatch and Meese would love premarital arrangements where you're given the names of five men if you're a woman or five women if you're a man. And at the time Reagan became governor in California, these files were already made up in California also of a list of 90,000 people that could be tapped for certain sensitivity or interest, if you think about that and wonder why Thurmond and Helms and Meese and Hatch just had to have Justice Ginsburg. Now, Ginsburg was interviewed by New York Times in 1966 about his questionnaire, and he said that it was geared toward college dating situations, and it was a college people that were targeted also by the COINTELPRO programs and Operation Chaos. And Ginsburg said in his interview he wanted people in their late teens or early 20s, people who want a date, not for marriage, but want a date. And this article continued, he never addressed the social issues in his life like abortion, privacy rights, or wrote anything about in his professional writing, but according to a great friend of his who's a professor of law at Harvard, he said that he wanted this Operation Match because he needed some experience in the real world. So he sets up an office with publicity from the New York Times and from Look magazine where people will pay $3. They pay the $3. They're not even paid $3 for the information. You send them your $3 and 135 answers to questions. 90,000 suckers are sucked in, and they certainly could continue. The CIA could approach some of them who seem to be willing to participate in dating, and you could fix some very nice arrangements, pull out possible future agents, and disseminate these people with agents. Say if I'm political, I'm studying history, I'm interested in the Kennedy assassination, boy, the computer could fill out five people to send to my house. Now, this was a time period when Tony Lasowitz was working for the New York Police Department, and then he went 6 years in plain clothes with the police department from New York, and he was at the island of Chappaquiddick when Ted Kennedy was knocked out for ever being a candidate for president because of the death of Mary Jo Kopechne. And that cabin was filled with five other women besides Mary Jo Kopechne. Who knows how they were recruited or when or how they got on the staff of these political people in Washington. The New York Times and Look gave it a lot of publicity, and this could be good to suck people in, get them into the dating service. And Ginsburg, as I say, never addressed himself to military issues at all, and was doing something as he left college that is totally foreign to him. He wasn't a psychology major. The article that Miami Herald says that Douglas Ginsburg, after going to from Cornell College to then Cambridge, and then with two Harvard undergraduates, started studying the compatibility of different kinds of people. Now, he's in corporate law advising the kinds of Chase Manhattan that was also a cover for Henry Kissinger at Harvard University, and afterwards involved with a lot of espionage with John J. McCloy. In those offices, when did he get a proclivity for understanding the compatibility of different people? I believe this was, as I say, a system set up by the intelligence community to suck in these 90,000 people who were willing to answer these questions. These aren't psych majors. They're not anthropologists. They have no background in this kind of activity. The allegations were Ginsburg had to support himself, so he had this service. But this is really a responsibility. Somebody asked for five dates, and they're sending names to these people out of a computer. I don't believe it was computerized except by the intelligence community already knowing men and women that could be useful and target specific people. The headquarters were in New York, and they sold stock to the public at one time. And as I say, for $3, you send in information, and the article says the odds of getting along with a girl are better if she's been screened by a computer. This was the reason for doing it. If you're interested in Renaissance art, you can't go to a girl and say, hello, do you like Botticelli? So the computer would send you someone with Renaissance art interests. And the friend of Ginsburg at Harvard, who still teaches there, Al Scott, said, to his credit, here's a guy who at age 19 had the presence of mind not to go to school if he didn't know what he wanted and to start an innovative business. He only invested $700 or $800 of his own, came out with more than $10,000. The company had declared bankruptcy. He didn't turn over his $10,000. And this was a period in 1965 to 68 when he goes back to college of entrapment of men and women for political purposes. And in 1974, at the time of the Watergate hearings and Senator Frank Church's investigation, it came out about the past misdeeds and the entrapment of various people. The San Francisco Examiner had a story, complaints about the computer dating service that Ginsburg helped run. And the punchline of this story is, as the Better Business Bureau began to go into Operation Match, which had moved from Boston to New York, the business suddenly discontinued. People had sent in their money, and the principals had disappeared. Well, he went right on to Cornell. He came from Cornell, had this computer work for 3 years, and went back to Cornell and then to Harvard Law School. So the FBI can find all these labor leaders and people who smoked pot or histories of other businesses that went bankrupt. And they say, well, we couldn't find Ginsburg. All of a sudden, he's nominated to the Supreme Court. And even the FBI can't find this record of Ginsburg in the past. But some very curious investigators found it. And then this article about the business that he ran said, the Postal Service officials in Boston said they're not certain of the outcomes of the investigation because at least two of the investigators have died. Well, maybe there's 10, but at least two primary witnesses have died that investigate that. And, of course, I'm always looking into primary witnesses who have been killed. The Examiner article on complaints about the computer data dating service say they started to come into the Postal Service, and evidently some people were very satisfied with their matches, and other people it wasn't meant to match or do, and it was a dummy front. One blind man requested Operation Match to send the names of 5 dates he could have in his own area, and the Better Business Bureau investigated the computer and found for his $5 that was sent in, his dates were in Ashland, Oregon, Attleboro, Fall River, Fitchburg, Virginia, Saxonville, Massachusetts, and Mashua, New Hampshire. So that blind man was supposed to go to 4 different states and a different city than where he lived. So the Operation Match, the conclusions were that it unduly favored some creditors over others, and the criminals, according to this article, fled town. The creditors left town. Well, there are only 3 people, and one of them was Ginsburg, and the Better Business Bureau began to look into complaints of what was going on, and Ginsburg, as I say, walked away with $10,000, and I believe it was a CIA dummy front, and they didn't even bother answering to the other people. And there are long articles about the computer business, and of course, if these people hadn't found that, these people, whoever did the investigation on the matter, the author of one of the articles, which didn't have an author, is Associated Press Wire Service, were certainly very good in locating this business operation, because anybody having 5 investigations into Justice Ginsburg would have found it and wondered why out of wedlock you're sending 5 luscious mates, men and women, to persons of the other sex, students predominantly, college-oriented, were you the most idealistic and curious about the anti-war in Vietnam? One author was Christopher Drew of Chicago Tribune. The other is the Wire Service. And then San Jose Mercury says the Supreme Court nominee's rocky tenure at Harvard caused the closing down of his consulting firm at Harvard. And this article goes into the fact that at Harvard Law School, where you're only supposed to be teaching law school and not running a business, he was the advisor, as I say, to Chase Manhattan. And Chase had their very famous Henry Kissinger on the campus there, who was an FBI informer and worked through Chase Manhattan. And this article tells about how Douglas Ginsburg set up an outside law consulting firm that advised wealthy corporations, and the private practice was against the law. The Harvard law professors, the dean, said that he was skirting a school policy. James Vorenberg was the dean of Harvard Law, and that he was going around the law to advise these major corporations, and his purpose as a professor there to take on the corporations as a private company was to tell them how to understand the new laws in Washington so they wouldn't have to pay the taxes that other people do, to advise them on the corporate law or the merger law. That's what he was doing. He was described as brilliant but arrogant, insensitive, snide, condescending, sarcastic. He pushed for conservative views. These are quotations of him from the Harvard class. He stressed economics, too little on law. He advanced his own conservative free market theories. He ridiculed the views of others, and he used the banking laws and advised these other people. And he was described among the worst professors they ever had. Now, this is the guy with the anti-war wife advising Robert Kennedy's staff, appearing as a liberal, helping Justice Goldberg, Thurgood Marshall, and having corporate clients at the same time until the university cut him off. Now, at the time of Watergate, the hearings before the Select Committee on Presidential Campaign Activities, Book 1, goes into the testimony of Tony Lasowitz, who worked in New York City as a cop, and he worked in the special services investigation, and he worked 6 years without a uniform under the Bureau of Special Services. And Lasowitz used to tickle the Watergate witnesses by telling about his one-way houses with the mirrors, glass you couldn't see through, and entrapping the persons that they targeted for political candidates with sexual partners. And he described himself as a super spy working with the sexual part for 6 years in New York City, and New York City is where Ginsburg had set up his computer service, where 90,000 people were putting information in all over the country about their sexual interests. And these hearings also, have reread what was going on in the era of 1965 through 68, and Mr. Tony Laswitz describes how he was a Chappaquiddick in 1969 at the time Mary Jo Kopechne was drowned, and he was disguised as a newspaper reporter, and he was asking the most embarrassing questions at the press conference about Ted Kennedy, and that involved a woman who was drowned and also a group of women at the house that evening who were partying before the death of Mary Jo Kopechne. And Laswitz worked with the police department. Also, the COINTELPRO program documents show that the targets of the FBI were such groups as those concerned with political activities, legislative activities, domestic issues, Negro questions, youth matters, women matters, cultural activities, and education, educational foundations, and schools, and colleges. And this is the area where he's smoking the joints and giving out, dispensing grass, and smoking with them, Mr. Cool Hippie. See, his nomination was turned down because he had grass. It was turned down because when the dating service and the information about the dating service came out, that was the end of him, because those are the things that the FBI would know and the CIA would know and the Defense Department, but we weren't supposed to know. And again, these zealot researchers who are out there finding this information can and do change the course of history. The Watergate hearings describe in 1966 an agreement and coordination between the CIA and the FBI and their involvement in internal security and domestic politics and breaking up various groups that included campuses and colleges. These come out of the Senate Watergate hearings. And during the period, thousands of young Americans and members of racial minorities were busted for civil disobedience and protest and dissent and grass. And the FBI and the CIA were highly involved in domestic intelligence just the years when he leaves Cornell and becomes a part of an Operation Match, again, with a title that sounds just like what I think it is, a CIA operation. He gave it the right title. Now, I want to make a comparison of that to broadcast and information I did about five years ago, broadcast number 317, and it has to do with a parallel, and it has to do with campus, and I want to share it with you because there's all new listeners here. There was a lawsuit that took place in San Francisco. It had to do with a Charles Winans, W-I-N-A-N-S, versus Rolling Stone, and it was filed in 1978. It was against Rolling Stone magazine because Paul Krasner of The Realist had written an article about the Manson family and the LSD, and again, the Manson now. We'll go into the son of Sam Manson, Anton LaVey, Michael Aquino in the next few weeks, and it overlaps with the type of agent provocateur events that were happening in that time period. Now, this particular person sued Rolling Stone for $450 million. Because of allegations of the Manson family and where they got their LSD and their drug supplies. It was because of an article that Paul Krasner wrote. The attorney for the prosecution was Melvin Belli, formerly Jack Ruby's attorney, and the defense was Rolling Stone, owned by Standard Oil Corporation. And the primary witness in the $450 million libel suit was Mae Brussel. There was an article in New West, April 16, 1978, where it describes my role as a primary witness in this case and how these people got tangled into the allegations that Krasner wrote about hippies and Navy intelligence. And Melvin Belli said that Mae Brussel will be an interesting person to have in court. He said she sounds like she's going to be an interesting witness, Mae Brussel against Jack Ruby's attorney, Melvin Belli. Now, part of the court material, I have a letter here where I was concerned that they were moving towards a court date in August of 78, and I had not yet received some material I wanted, and the letter said her concern involves recent revelations by 1978 that military intelligence agents, including naval intelligence officers, were working undercover in various locales and on college campuses during the 60s. Those are campuses across the country. She said the agents worked under the umbrella of Project Resistance, and she feels that the defense in this lawsuit by Rolling Stone should get all the documents on the project through the Freedom of Information Act, and if documents are no longer available or are released in a censored way, it should be possible to remove for the dismissal of the lawsuit against Rolling Stone. And I filled out for Rolling Stone as their primary witness a pre-trial deposition that was only 12 pages long. It was exactly 12 pages long. And in that, I detailed how agent provocateurs dressed as hippies who walk on the highways, who have cars in back that they don't use, who smoke the pot, appear like hippies, have a role in changing the fabric arts of our society, of infiltrating those people who are genuine in doing their general activities or smoking the grass, and how these agents are brought into the milieu to have them busted and so forth. And after I gave this 12-page deposition on the case, there had been $2 million in the defense of the case by Rolling Stone and $1 million in the prosecution. And after just 12 pages of the deposition, the entire case was thrown out of court. I also invited on KGO, I was doing a lot of broadcasts with Bob Trevor, I invited the public to come to the court in San Francisco that summer and watch the unveiling, taking the veil off those persons who work and act like hippies and show their relationship in general and in particular to the police department, to the Navy intelligence, to military intelligence, and also this was related to the Manson family and the drugs. And I said, watch Americana, because only in a lawsuit, a civil suit in a court like this, can you ever get these stories. Just as the Warren Commission covered up the murder of John Kennedy and the Watergate inquiry covered up the real parts of Watergate, and the Iran-Contra has covered up the real part, such as the assassination, the drugs, the 1980 sabotage of the election. It takes a court of law to really get a civil court of law to get into these matters. Now, the deposition that I gave went into my background, where I was educated, how I happened to study these assassinations, how I went into the murders of John Kennedy, Martin Luther King, George Lincoln Rockwell, Malcolm X, the shooting of George Wallace, and the operation of the Manson family. And it was that extensive research I did from the moment that Sharon Tate and the five others in her home in the LaBianca family were murdered that I got a good handle on the military intelligence operation of Manson. And it is directly tied in to the Anton LaVey and the Church of Set in San Francisco and up to the Pentagon, which is breaking now. And I went into the ways that I had been under surveillance, that there was domestic intelligence of the military, federal government, during the 1960s and 70s. And Judge Ginsburg, who was just a Cornell dropout for a couple of years, was, I believe, was part of that 1965 to 1968 operation. Then I went into the articles I'd published for The Realist and how I started my radio program in 1971. The background I gave was extensive on my own surveillance, the federal government's use of the state of California, the military domestic surveillance, and the use of the military and domestic and FBI and CIA because of five important military installations on the Monterey Peninsula, and my work with trying to study domestic intelligence. And again, this makes me think that the Ginsburg story just reeks of him being part of that operation. And his operation was also in California. And that's where Edwin Meese got the love affair for Douglas Ginsburg for his past work during the years where they accumulated in 1 year 90,000 names. And he and Ronald Reagan were part of this whole COINTEL operation. They set up the SLA, which I wrote as the SLA is the CIA, and the martial law plans and so forth. And in this article, I described the political activities I had and how we were photographed and involved with the mutiny trial, the GI coffee house, and so forth. And then the persons who moved into town with military vans and trucks who were disguised as hippies and my experience of them. And they, in turn, working and writing about witchcraft again, witchcraft, writing a book for the Los Angeles Police Department on witchcraft going to this past period, and how I began to recognize those agent provocateurs and several in particular that could be hired to affect the social climate around us. And when I went into details of this case and the CIA relationships to the case and the guns and bragging about skinning animals alive, again, this is what the occult are doing, the Michael Aquino group that are linked from the Pentagon to the nursery schools, killing animals in front of children alive. And I went into the Manson family, the hippies and the bikers, the so-called hippies and bikers, and filled this affidavit on the social history of how I became familiar with this particular case and the similarities to what happened to my life. I understood them, and I presented this, and the woman who took the deposition for the lawyers, it was in May of 1978, said, "This is the most important or interesting thing I've ever done in my law career." And it was that background that I had that made me familiar right away with when the Ginsburg story broke and all the beginnings that, oh, he had pot, oh, isn't that terrible, he had this grass, that I knew this was a whole lot of malarkey. It wasn't the grass. It was that Edwin Meese's insistence over Judge Kennedy and Orrin Hatch's insistence and Jesse Helms and Strom Thurmond. Those people have worked with the agent provocateurs. They've worked with the far, far right. They know that illusion of the hippie that was passed off to people where Reagan thought he could get a centrist vote, you know, to get his judge in. But I did want to cover this. I'll go back to the occult next week in part three of the nursery schools, the military operations. I wanted to get the Ginsburg in because, again, the recognition of him with these people going back to years ago to his time period where they were informers. I was very familiar with all that, studied it and lived it, which is worse. And I wanted to share that with you because it's important to appreciate what was going on. Now I'll conclude by thanking Coast Components at 684-1185, the Monterey Bay Area's distributor of electronic components. Thank you for the underwriting grant that brought you the past hour of World Watchers. The previous hour World Watchers was made possible in part by Lowdown, a leading manufacturer of micro peripherals located in Scotts Valley. For more information, call 438-7400. You hang in there, and I'll be back with you in a moment to continue with the second half of this program.
America is waiting for a message of some sort or another.